we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 26th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Danielle Reiser.
Hi.
And Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
Welcome, everyone. Now, next Thursday, September the 1st, marks the opening of the season of the annual dolphin drive in Taiji, Japan, as depicted in the documentary film The Cove. September 1st is also declared as Japan Dolphins Day to honor these dolphins, and today's show will be dedicated to all the dolphins that are kept in captivity at the hands of humans for the purposes of our entertainment. The international nonprofit organization In Defense of Animals has just published a list of the top 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in North America. And for our feature interview today, we'll have Dr. Toni Frohoff on the show. She's a cetacean specialist, and she will be on the show to tell us about this list. And guess what? Our own Vancouver Aquarium comes out as number 9. But for our first segment, we'll have our own discussion on dolphins in captivity and what the future may hold for them if we are to anticipate progression for their dire circumstances being held in these concrete tanks. The National Aquarium in Baltimore, Maryland, has recently announced that they will be moving their 8 bottlenose dolphins to a seaside sanctuary, which they intend to build and transition to by the year 2020. We'll talk about the plans for the sanctuary and what shifting to this type of model may mean for the freedoms of these imprisoned beings in future years to come. But first, Daniela, you organized a day out last weekend to attend the Delta Animal Expo, and I want to hear all about that, please.
Yeah, so the Delta Animal Expo was, as we had expected, some great shelter and rescue organizations, and of course those other organizations such as the Vancouver Aquarium and breeders that we had an issue with. So the crowd was mixed, all ages from young to old, with families. And we successfully distributed over 800 flyers in 2 hours.
Oh, what were these flyers about?
They were anti-speciesist flyers.
I actually have one right here.
Exactly.
I took a look at it. So 800 flyers, that's a lot of flyers. And about how many people attended the show in total?
Last year they had 5,000. So
wow.
I would say probably more because it's becoming more popular each year.
Yeah, you must have been super busy all day. So what was the reception like to your interactions that you had with people?
They were really good. We were about 7 people handing them out. Mm-hmm. And
Jen, you were there, right?
Yes, I was.
Uh-huh. And so we got feedback from the people handing them out that they had great conversations with people. And we only had 2 negative comments. But other than that, everybody took them. We were peaceful, friendly, and we helped anybody out who needed help.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about just sort of what, in your opinion, as an animal rights activist and vegan, what was the theme of the whole day's of community events for you? Like, what did you observe there as someone who cares for the animals?
Well, first of all, I thought it looked like it was very friendly. It was like, for kids, I mean, it looked like, yay, we want to go there, I want to pet animals, I want to see animals. And that's the problem that we have, is when animals are on display for entertaining purposes. For example, there was a pig and a pony and llamas there to be petted, and there was no educational material to go with it. Like, it was just, oh, they're here for the kids.
Just exploitation.
Yeah. And then the rabbit agility as well. It's all fine to do rabbit agility with, you know, love and in your home. But when you're out in the crowds and there's microphones or speakers and kids cheering, it's just so much for these animals. They're prey animals.
And can I just talk about, speaking of prey animals and the speakers, there was a gentleman there who was actually from a reputable organization that we did not have an issue with. It was a rescued owl that he had on his hand. And he told me that this owl, it's a barn owl, it can hear a human heartbeat from 25 feet away. And it was next to a blaring speaker where a girl who was playing DJ was yelling into the microphone.
Right.
That seems very unnatural to put an animal like that, who's a wild animal, in that kind of environment, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I guess that could be said for the, like you said, there were llamas there, is that right? Yeah. Or a llama?
Well,
like,
there was a lady that breeds and has llamas that perform in TV radio shows. TV shows.
What do they do to perform? Are they actors?
They're actors, okay. Yeah. So there's a YouTube video where you can watch what it's heartbreaking for me to see the llama having to be in this situation. And she sells wool, so she was selling her scarves or something there.
So I'm just interested to know, you said you had mostly like positive reception from people who were there. I guess they were there because they wanted to take their kids, right, to enjoy the animals. But did they perhaps see things from a different perspective, like your anti-speciesist perspective when you spoke to them?
Yeah, we just pointed out that why do we love some and eat or exploit the others? So with our flyers, and we're talking that we love all animals and that the pigs are smart, they're just as smart as dogs. I think people, they listen to us and they're very open. And we also talked about an upcoming Earthlings event that people are interested in coming and seeing now.
That's an event that, if people don't know, there's a documentary film called Earthlings, and it's all about how people exploit animals in all different ways. And we'll be talking more about that later on the show. Jen, how was the day for you in terms of just your overall impression?
Well, we planned the event to be educational and professional, so I believe that was part of its success. We were handing out a lot of flyers. People were really happy to receive them. And when I handed them out to people, just to add value to them so they wouldn't throw them away at the end of the day, I said, there's a bunch of free documentaries in here that you can find online, and I guarantee they will change your life. And that's Earthlings, which is the reason I'm vegan and the reason most vegans are vegan. And what else did we have? Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which is on YouTube.
Forks Over Knives and Cowspiracy.
And Cowspiracy. And I mean, after watching those, I think it'll make an impact in people's lives.
And there's something for everyone there too, right? Mm-hmm. Like one film might affect someone completely differently than it would affect another, and vice versa.
Right. It will definitely spark a discussion amongst people and plant seeds in their heads.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for reporting on your day at the Delta Animal Expo. I know, like, among the animal rights community, it might be a very kind of controversial event to attend because it is about speciesism and animal exploitation, even though there's good human intention there. But you, Daniela, and Jen, and the others that were there, you turned it around and made it into something positive. So thanks for doing that.
No problem.
No problem.
Hello, darlings. Sean Treviel here for Fruit Salad. Join us every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. for community news and events, live performances and music, fantastic guests, and just general fabulousness that you'd find in a fruit salad. Support your community radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. There's nothing else like this in Vancouver or in the world. Listen in.
So now we've got some events to announce. As Allison mentioned, September 1st is Japan Dolphins Day. That's this Thursday. And that marks the beginning of yet another season of the notorious dolphin drive hunts in Taiji, as made known by the documentary The Cove back in 2009. And now 7 years after that film came out, the hunt still goes on, and about 2,000 dolphins are killed and captured between September and April. And so they're encouraging people, Rick O'Berry's Dolphin Project is encouraging people to set up events at Japanese consulates and embassies around the world to put on the public pressure that dolphins are individuals meant to be celebrated rather than slaughtered and captured. And as far as I know, there's no registered event for Vancouver, but by all means, make a sign, go down there. It's West Hastings, the Japanese consulate, and just go let them know, make some noise, and get involved. And something closer to home, animals closer to home, September 3rd, Saturday, September 3rd, there is an all-day chicken vigil put on by Liberation BC. They do this every month. This one is special because it is all day, between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. at Hastings and Commercial in front of the Hallmark Slaughterhouse. Come for as long as you want or as short as you want and just bear witness, do some outreach, and help raise awareness of these animals who suffer behind the walls and normally nobody pays attention. So by all means, come on down and have some fun with it.
And do you care about animals? Do you think it's wrong to cause unnecessary suffering? Then join us for a free screening of the powerful life-changing documentary Earthlings by Sean Monson and narrated by Joaquin Phoenix. Together we can raise consciousness for making ethical choices of compassion for all living beings. We will be showing this impactful documentary at the Creekside Community Center in the Athletes Village on September 10th. The doors open at 6:30. Bring your friends and family for this free community event of open dialogue, compassion for animals, and community spirit with snacks and other resources provided. We will be joined by Jordan Reichert of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada. After the documentary, Jordan will answer questions you may have pertaining to the laws and regulations in Canada and provide ideas for action that you can take to make a difference. Don't miss out on this unique event. To reserve your seats or find out more, go to www.loveyourfellowearthlings.com. On September 11th, the Vancouver March to Close All Slaughterhouses is closing in just 2 weeks away. People from all over will rally at 12 p.m. at the Vancouver Art Gallery, uniting for total animal liberation. The March to Close All Slaughterhouses is a global movement that started in France in 2012. It is a powerful movement that makes a clear demand on society to demand the end of animal exploitation and a demand for total animal liberation. A sea of people will be marching through the streets of Vancouver on September 11th. Vancouver will be the second city in Canada and one of 12 globally, with cities popping up all over the world and putting themselves on the map. Come join the city on September 11th, 2016, as we put Vancouver on the map. The power of this movement is as powerful as the numbers behind us. Unite with us for this critical event and speak out on behalf of those who cannot speak for themselves.
You have me sold. I'm going to go.
Me too.
Are you all going? Okay,
great. Thanks for that. This is a peaceful, inclusive, family-friendly, community-based walk, and all are welcome. This will be a march for years to come. Come join the revolution and make history in our city. The march will depart from Vancouver Art Gallery up Robson to Denman to Davie to Granville and will reconvene at the Vancouver Art Gallery. There will be DJ at opening and closing ceremonies, raffles, speeches, and many other activities and happenings. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you for the events.
So, Jen, I hear that in light of the Japan Dolphin Day, you have a story about the International Aquarium of Baltimore's Sea Sanctuary that's going to be built. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, in June of this year, Baltimore's National Aquarium announced that it will move its pod of 8 dolphins to a seaside sanctuary, rather than continue to have them in the indoor concrete tank where they currently reside. The sanctuary will be built in either Florida or the Caribbean by the end of year 2020. John Racanelli, who has been the CEO of the aquarium since 2011, has stated that, quote, "Through feedback painstakingly gathered over 10 years, we have learned that the American public is increasingly uneasy with the notion of keeping dolphins and whales in captivity. These beliefs matter to us." The decision to shut down the Baltimore exhibit has been 5 years in the making. In their protected oceanside habitat, the dolphins will be cared for full-time by a veterinarian and other experts. The aquarium has no plans to breed the dolphins at the sanctuary and will keep the pod together as they are bonded.
So will the public be able to visit the sanctuary?
The dolphins' new home will still have a digital connection to the aquarium in Baltimore, and the research will be done at the sanctuary. It will be open to the public, and visitors will be able to watch the dolphins from a viewing deck.
It's nice to see a shift in thinking around the topic of captivity.
Yeah, so humans have been capturing dolphins for use in aquariums for about 80 years now. They're forced to interact with thousands of visitors in what's referred to as dolphin experiences and perform circus-like tricks, swimming in laps in the pools with trainers standing on their backs, all with the stressful background noise of loud music and screaming crowds. Their tanks do not resemble nature and are often only 15 feet deep. In some tanks, cetaceans are exposed to constant sun as there's no shade provided and they cannot swim deep as they would in the wild, and sunburns are a concern for them. The decision by the International Aquarium in Baltimore has the potential to inspire others to create more humane alternatives for their cetaceans as well.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate that we would be working against such a profitable industry.
It does create some issues. I mean, to ask aquariums to relinquish their dolphins that are making them a lot of profit is going to be challenging. Holding dolphins in captivity is a worldwide multi-billion-dollar industry. And if any of you listeners out there have seen the 2009 documentary called The Cove, you know that many of these dolphins are captured in a brutal hunt in Chaiji, Japan. Dolphins caught for sale for aquariums can fetch up to $150,000, whereas a dead dolphin for the meat trade is only worth about $600. So obviously, it's quite an industry that we're working against.
So can you tell us more about the dolphin trade?
The migrating dolphins are herded into a cove where they're netted and killed by means of spears and knives over the side of small fishing boats. When a pod is located, banger boats equipped with metal poles on their sides begin to herd the dolphins via banging on the flange on the top of the poles with a hammer. This banging creates a sensory nightmare for the acoustically sophisticated animals, and in an effort to protect members of their pod, the panic-driven animals often become trapped with no means of escape. At this point, the pod has nothing left to do but wait. The dolphins become further emotionally and physically weakened and are easily caught by the fishermen. The hunt takes place for 6 consecutive months annually, and the cove, once aquamarine in color, turns red from blood. I think you can see this documentary on Netflix.
So can you tell us any stories about any former dolphin trainers who had a change of heart in light of all this?
Yeah, I'm happy to say there are many, but I'll just tell you one story. So Rick O'Berry was once the highest paid dolphin trainer in the world. He worked for Miami's Seaquarium in the 1960s and was in charge of capturing, breeding, and training dolphins, as well as becoming the head trainer for the popular TV series called Flipper from 1964 to 1967. Flipper was actually 5 dolphins who fell upon ill health, and Rick believes that one of them committed suicide in his arms. Dolphins are the only animals who consciously breathe. He believes that the dolphin made the conscious choice to end its life. This is not the only account of a dolphin doing this. In the documentary Blackfish, which you can also see on Netflix, a similar story is told of a dolphin taking its last breath and sinking beneath the surface of its tank to die. By 1970, Rick had a change of heart and has crusaded to end this cruel practice. You can find out more about Rick from his organization, thedolphinproject.org.
I have to say, too, that I had the opportunity to interview him on the show several years ago. It was an amazing, very moving interview. He told us his story, told us about that dolphin dying in his arm, who looked into his eyes and decided that that was going to be her last breath. Wow. And sank to the bottom because, unlike humans, dolphins choose whether they're going to breathe or not. It's not an instant reflex, right, like we have, right? And
right,
it's such a good interview. If people want to check that out, it's at animalvoices.org and just look up Rick O'Berry.
And also, dolphins are highly intelligent, aren't they?
Yes, they're highly intelligent sentient beings, as we all know. In the wild, they live in pods that range from 10 to 1,000 members. They work as a team to harvest schools of fish. They're approximately 2 to 4 meters in length and swim up to 97 kilometers a day. It's clear that they're being deprived of many of their natural behaviors that they would experience in the wild. Often aquariums claim that dolphins they hold in captivity are rescued and non-releasable. At the Vancouver Aquarium, there's currently 1 dolphin residing at the facility. 2 have recently died. 2 of the dolphins never had stranding numbers, which indicate that they were rescued from a fishing net. Spinnaker was taken from Osaka's aquarium and Hannah and Helen from the Inoshima aquarium. So in reality, what they have done is created more space in those aquariums by purchasing them for future purchases from the wild, and that has fueled the dolphin trade. Helen is the remaining dolphin and came from Inoshima, where she resided for 9 years. This is hardly a rescue. This is a business transaction to obtain performing dolphins to sell tickets at a dolphin circus.
There was a documentary made about the Vancouver Aquarium recently. Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered.
That's right. It was released last year by local filmmaker Gary Charbonneau. It can be seen on YouTube. It states that the revenues at the aquarium have reached an all-time high of over $30 million, yet conservation, rescue, research, and education, which is their supposed main mandate, have been dwindling. The financials released by the aquarium are documented in the film and have caused much concern amongst the scientific community, well-meaning donors, animal law lawyers, politicians, animal rights advocates, and the public as the aquarium profits and salaries continue to rise.
Is there anything planned for Canada for cetaceans?
Yes, I'm happy to say neuroscientist and expert in animal behavior and cognition, Dr. Lori Marino, who we've had on the show, has started the Whale Sanctuary Project, which will create a new home for captive cetaceans. It's hopeful that this practice of captivity will come to an end. We know very well that animals do not thrive in captivity, and these facilities have a high infant death rate. We have sanctuaries for all kinds of animals, but so far none for cetaceans. You can donate to the Whale Sanctuary Project by visiting the website whalesanctuaryproject.org.
And one of the locations that they're looking at actually is here on the Pacific Northwest.
Wouldn't that be exciting? I know.
Yeah, so it could be very close to home here in Vancouver or Vancouver Island.
And the sooner we donate, the sooner that will happen. So please go ahead and do that. And those who argue that these aquariums are necessary to educate and inspire children are forgetting that these animals are not engaging in all of their natural behaviors. So what are we really teaching them? Is that if we really want to satisfy our curiosity, it's okay to keep sentient, highly intelligent beings in depressing, inhumane, small, unnatural conditions for our benefit? We're teaching children a lack of compassion toward animals. There's many YouTube videos of animals in the wild that children can learn much more from. For example, Planet Earth, the DVD series. Cetacean experts claim that the most valuable research is performed on cetaceans in their natural habitat anyway. And what I usually say to parents I meet who give me this argument is children love dinosaurs and know a lot of facts about them, yet they have never seen one in real life. We don't need to capture animals in order to teach children to love and learn about them.
That's a super good point. And I would argue that children even love dinosaurs more than they love whales and dolphins.
And maybe because they've read more about them. And
there's more fantasy. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. But I have a really beautiful story. I was doing a tabling event at Handsworth Secondary School's Sustainability Fair last spring. We went to a whole bunch of schools, actually, and this was my favorite one. And if anyone out there is listening and they have children in Handsworth Secondary School, give them a hug for me right now. I love these kids. So I was there, and these four lovely girls kept returning back to my table, even though there were so many other tables. And by this point, I had to say to them, girls, I don't think I have any more information for you. I've told you everything I can, and I've given you websites, and how can I help you? And they just sweetly looked at me and said, we just like your table the best, and we want to stand here.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, and one of them initially came up to me with tears in her eyes, and she said to me, is Tillicum going to die? And this is back when Tillicum's failing health was all over the news. And I started crying. I looked back at her, and I said, I think so. I mean, I was choking on my words. When I was a kid growing up in Victoria, I used to visit Tillicum. And when she asked me that question, I thought, look how many years I've been alive, 38 years. And I have had all this freedom while Tillicum has been stuck in that tank.
And not only that, shipped for breeding too, right?
Yeah.
He's the major breeder for SeaWorld.
Right. Yeah. So I asked the public this, would you rather raise children to have this compassion that I was so touched by in these young women from Handsworth Secondary School, or would you rather raise children who support captivity? Right?
Right.
Yeah. I have friends who live in Vancouver and have kids, and they've boycotted the Vancouver Aquarium. Yeah. They don't go to their school field trips. And I hope when that discussion comes up in class, other kids are inspired. Wouldn't you love to be there for that discussion?
And I hope it's even brought up as an option, because people just go along with society, right? They go, there's a field trip to the aquarium. Let's go. No one questions it.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminds me of a story I heard lately. Dr. Neil Bernard, he was saying how in medical school, he decided that he wasn't going to do the dog lab where they put down a dog, a completely healthy dog, mm-hmm. just to write a report about it. And he said no. And then someone said, well, if he's not doing it, I'm not doing it. And then another person said that. And then they shut it down. Right. And now he shut down all animal research and medical schools in the states because of one person.
Amazing.
Because and this started a movement. Can we get this kind of a movement happening in North America for cetaceans in aquariums?
One of my slogans that I say to people when they ask why I'm always speaking out on behalf of animals is silence is betrayal. Mm-hmm. Silence is almost an action in itself.
Yeah. I've been finding myself very vocal with my parents lately. We Skyped the other day, and I just say, we're talking about the Anita Kreinz's trial, right? Mm-hmm. Because my mom said, oh, that's your friend, right? She saw my post on Facebook. And I just started just going off on, like, because I woke up one morning, I have to say, a few weeks ago when I was at visiting there, and I woke up to the smell of a pig being cooked and really disgusted me. She wasn't cooking it for herself. She was cooking it for some other people. But and I told her, this is what you're contributing to. Like, because she agreed. My parents agreed that this is not, it's not humane. And I hope that the same can be said. If people can realize that about aquariums too. You need to be vocal to actually bring it up, like to actually make them think that you're right. This isn't humane.
Yes. So anyone listening out there, please watch Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered on YouTube and check out the website vanaquafacts.org.
We have some news.
Yes. Yes, we do have some news. I will start off with one story that came up this week. The SPCA is asking for the public's help in finding two people who put a dead dog into a Coquitlam dumpster last month. July 26th, and some footage shows some people throwing this dog into the dumpster. As it turns out, the dog, after the SPCA investigated, the dog died from heat exposure, and so they're hoping that someone will recognize the individuals or the vehicle in the footage so they can determine what happened to the dog and why she was discarded like garbage. So you can search that. CBC's got the video if you search the story on CBC, and see if you can find anything. Send them some information. The heat exposure is obviously a big issue for dogs in summer. Dogs are the animals we tend to care about when it comes to that. Dogs and cats, heat exposure, don't leave them in hot cars. But as we've seen in the news as well, another kind of animal that suffers from the heat in the summer are pigs. Daniela, you've got a story on that.
Right. I've got the news on the pig trial. The trial for an Ontario animal rights activist, Anita Kreinz, began on Wednesday, August 24th, as she fought a mischief charge after giving water to pigs inside a truck on their way to a slaughterhouse last summer. Anita was charged with the pig's owner filed a complaint with police shortly after the incident in June 2015 in Burlington, Ontario. She could be facing jail time of up to 10 years and a fine of $5,000. Last year, a pig farming company decided to file a criminal complaint against Anita for giving water to dehydrated pigs in their last moments before being killed. The farmers didn't want their stuff, as they say, interfered with. Inevitably, the real criminals are slowly being revealed through cross-examination, and the trial is receiving international media attention and was live-tweeted by multiple reporters from the courtroom. Here are a few tweets from inside the courtroom. The driver acknowledged that pigs go into distress during transport. The driver is aware that trucks with fans, ventilation, and water misting are available but doesn't have this technology on his truck. When the driver got out of the truck to confront Anita, who was giving water to an obviously heat-stressed animal who was panting and foaming at the mouth, the driver acknowledged that he didn't even look at the pig to see whether they were in distress. The lawyer asked the driver to confirm that trucking contract requires drivers to comply with federal animal welfare laws, and the driver doesn't know. That's not my department, he says. When the farmer took the stand, the farmer said, my primary concern was a contaminant that entered my truck that my property was on and could jeopardize the quality of load. The farmer agrees, however, that he has never had any pigs turned away due to activists. He also agrees he has never had any loss due to activists. And the farmer says his concern is for food safety. The Environment Canada sent a warning letter to the same farmer and his operation in 2006, and another complaint was issued in 2007. It was stated earlier that the farmer's company had leaked manure into the river, which killed aquatic life. The lawyer asked, "Were you ultimately fined?" Which the farmer answered, "Yes, we were." The lawyer stated, "Large amounts of substance made way into the Thames River. You were found guilty." Which the farmer said, "Yes, we were found guilty." Later on, an expert witness, Dr. May, takes the stand. She's an expert in vet medicine and animal welfare. She stated that the pigs eagerly and rapidly accepted water, which shows the need, and their heavy panting exhibits overheating. The respiratory rate was elevated. Open mouth breathing and foaming of mouth suggests overheating and heat distress. She also states water being offered provided relief from suffering and to some measures relief of dehydration. The closer the animals are to one another, the less effective they can cool themselves. At 1:43 Pacific Standard Time, the court adjourned until October 3rd. Federal statistics confirm that thousands of pigs arrive dead at slaughterhouses in Canada each and every year. Why are we only outraged when the victim is a dog and the vehicle is a car? Showing mercy to animal isn't a crime. Farming them is.
Well, thank you so much for that news update on Anita, Daniela, and thanks for the news to Sinead.
You're welcome.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
For our feature interview, we have Dr. Tony Frohoff on the show. Tony is a wildlife behavioral biologist specializing in marine mammals for more than 30 years. She is the staff scientist for cetaceans and elephants for the nonprofit organization In Defense of Animals, which is an international animal rights and rescue organization dedicated to protecting the rights, welfare, and habitats of animals. As well as a co-author of two books on cetaceans, Tony has put together the recent list of the top 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in North America that IDA just published last month. She is here today to tell us more about this list and dolphins in captivity. Hello, Tony, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you, Allison. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm a fan.
Well, thank you, Tony.
So this is In Defense of Animals' first ever list of the top 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in North America. Why was it time now to put out this list this year?
Well, it couldn't come out soon enough, in my opinion. In Defense of Animals worked very hard to get this list out because it is, as far as we know, the first ever list compiled of what's considered to be, in some ways, the 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in captivity, at least in North America. The timing is imperative for several reasons. Most importantly, the Taiji, Japan dolphin slaughter is set to begin in September, in just a few weeks from now. And as most of your listeners may already know, is one of the darkest times for humanity and dolphins alike. And we really want people to understand that when they see dolphins in captivity, they may be seeing dolphins who were obtained from the hunt or contributing to dolphins being purchased from that slaughter so that they could be in the facility where they may be swimming with dolphins or watching them.
And while I understand that you spent over a year to create this list, there was a lot of research done. Can you tell us the process that was followed to do the research to whittle down to these 10 facilities out of over 60 in North America? Now, I understand that the process included in-person assessment at these facilities that hold captive dolphins. Can you just tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, we did work over a year on the list, but I have to tell you, admittedly, the list kept changing. And it's kind of like a moving target because we weren't just trying to look for what were the absolute worst facilities, because that changes constantly. But what we did want to do was highlight what facilities represented the most egregious abuses against dolphins and in some cases the habitat. So in a sense, we wanted each facility to represent the issues that are facing dolphins in captivity in North America and around the world. So yes, facilities were assessed in person through review of government and veterinary records and death reports. Some trainers and others within facilities actually volunteered information to us, including video and other indisputable evidence of certain occurrences that were actually even shocking to me. And I've been working on this dolphins in captivity for decades. And so we received a lot of information, and we really wanted to illustrate what is going on behind the scenes, and also not to let the more, quote, state-of-the-art, unquote, facilities with modern technologies go by without due notice behind the veil. Behind the veil of all the glamour and the slick commercialism and the expensive enclosures that don't always equal to better well-being for the cetaceans trapped within.
And can you give us an idea of how many dolphins and whales are currently in captivity in North America? I was surprised just to even learn that there were over 60 facilities, but how many dolphins and whales does that include?
Well, there are about, believe it or not, Mexico, it's, you know, not a large, a huge country, but there are at least 30 facilities and more than 300 cetaceans in Mexico alone. And there are only two facilities in Canada, but they both made the list in part for what they represent. And they also, one of them in particular, has a lot of cetaceans. And so there are almost, with just two facilities, almost 60 cetaceans in Canada, and almost 500 in the U.S., and, you know, with 35 facilities. So it's just really interesting to see the distribution. And we also wanted, we had to include Mexico because there are some facilities, for example, two of them are owned by a company called Dolphin Discovery, and they seem to be expanding not just around Mexico, but into the U.S. and Italy and perhaps other areas of Europe. They own more facilities than SeaWorld does. So certain things really popped out from this assessment that have been going under the radar for a long time, and people need to know about them.
Well, I'd like to know about some of your findings. There's a lot of information in this list that our listeners can find online, but let's hear some of the highlights. So first of all, can you tell us why SeaWorld, which is the leader in dolphinariums, you can say, they're also the leader in worst tanks, and why is that?
SeaWorld was shamed as our number one worst aquarium because they represent the biggest opportunity, but yet resulted in the greatest disappointment of all. Some of your listeners may have heard perhaps good things about SeaWorld announcing that it would end its breeding orca breeding program and the performances. But these statements lack the depth of change that the orcas and dolphins there deserve because they're misleading. They were encouraging. But what really was going on behind the scenes, first of all, is that the California Commission, California Coastal Commission, had already restricted SeaWorld's ability to breed orcas in San Diego. So it sounded really encouraging. Oh, SeaWorld's, you know, becoming aware of orca needs and announcing that they're going to phase out orca breeding. But it really was at least preceded, if not directly related to, a ruling from the California Coastal Commission. So that was a huge disappointment. Second of all, they really threw away the key for these orcas by stating that they didn't plan to do to give them a different or a better life. In fact, they had originally expressed interest in expanding the facility so that the orcas would presumably have more space. But once they realized that they couldn't breed the orcas in California, they did not want to expand the space for the orcas currently there. And they have expressed that orcas don't deserve natural seaside sanctuary where they could retire in peace. And I was really shocked to look at the quality of what I consider, from my academic background and my experience, to be the poor psychological well-being of the orcas I observed, who are languishing or otherwise suffering, in my opinion, in those tanks. So it's a great, great opportunity for them, they thought, probably from a PR perspective, but it's turned out to be a tragic disappointment. In fact, we have one honorable mention on our list, if I could bring that up as an example, to contradict what SeaWorld could have been or could be, that we do have an honorable mention from the National Aquarium, because in Baltimore, there are bottlenose dolphins who are in the aquarium. And the aquarium itself has announced intentions to create what may be the nation's first oceanside dolphin sanctuary by 2020. And so they have themselves been critical about shows being antiquated and noting that, quote, when people see dolphins in this kind of sterile setting, the message that they take away are not, in fact, the ones that we as conservationists want them to. So they are actively looking for alternatives and cetacean sanctuary and retirement. So, you know, you see this as encouraging. And then we see SeaWorld, which has praised itself on being an industry leader, as really being misleading and discouraging. So that's right there at number one, Allison.
You had alluded to Marineland in Ontario before. Now, did you say that they have 60 cetaceans there? I'd like to talk about Marineland and why they made your list.
Absolutely. Marineland was actually listed as the second worst by our standards, in part based on it being the starkest contrast of having a solitary orca there and a beluga stockpile. And just to clarify, earlier I think I said that there were about 60 cetaceans across two facilities in Canada. But most of these are in Marineland. In fact, we talk about, it appears that there's a case of what could be considered beluga hoarding, because there are at least 45, 46 beluga whales just at this one facility, Allison. And so, you know, and we also mentioned there are not just bottlenose dolphins and 28 black bears, but also left, from what we know, approximately 500 fallow deer. And there was an undercover investigation from Last Chance for Animals. And from what video we saw, not just from them, but from also some expert videographers who went to the facility, we observed beluga suffering from a litany of physical ailments. Some of these can be attributed to literally being crowded in not just in small tanks, but crowded together in what manner that I would consider to be haphazard. And this would be considered unprofessional, I believe, not only by anti-captivity standards, but by even many zoo and aquarium standards. And the belugas there were suffering from a litany of physical ailments, at least appeared to be eye abnormalities, hypersalivation, regurgitation, bleeding and lacerations, really signs of severe eye irritation. A lot of really disturbing things that one would, you know, we expect countries that are, you know, highly technological and such and civilized to do better. And yet here in very progressive areas in Canada and the U.S., we find these really staggeringly horrible conditions, at least by my standards. And that of others for dolphins and whales. I just may mention one more thing that was the most obvious, perhaps, at Marineland, is the fact that they have a beluga there who is Kiska, who is completely alone and separated from all other belugas. Kiska was ripped away from her family when she was a baby. She's outlived at least 17 other orcas at Marineland. and been used to breed for new exhibits, and has witnessed and survived the death of every one of her five children at Marineland. So some of us in the U.S. know about a solitary orca kept at Miami Seaquarium, but we took Tisca's situation and the situation for the belugas at Marineland at number two because they were both so atrocious.
And our very own Vancouver Aquarium made it as number nine on the list. From your research, can you tell us the reasons why you chose the Vancouver Aquarium here as one of the worst 10 tanks in North America?
Vancouver Aquarium is listed at nine on the list. And again, Vancouver Aquarium is very high tech. It has a very modern infrastructure, in many ways considered a state-of-the-art facility. But Vancouver Aquarium represents what we call beluga breeding mills. And we wanted to raise attention, and Vancouver Aquarium unfortunately brings this point up very tragically, that belugas really can suffer horrifically as part of what's dubbed as a conservation breeding reproductive process or program. But really, it seems to just be to restock the aquariums. None of these belugas will be reintroduced to the wild. And the artificial insemination procedures can be highly invasive on the female. At Vancouver Aquarium, our understanding is that two beluga mothers, for example, Whisper and Ruby, were reportedly forced to bear the physical and emotional impact of five infant deaths, some stillborn, within 4 years, one after the other. And that's why we say that it's like a breeding male, because it's just really tragic the way that they are artificially inseminated and forced to breed even when their young are dying incessantly in front of them. And I would like to just mention that Dr. Jane Goodall has singled out Vancouver Aquarium's breeding program as, short quote from her, no longer defensible by science. This is demonstrated by the high mortality rates evident in these breeding programs and by the ongoing use of these animals in interactive shows as entertainment, unquote. So that's why Vancouver Aquarium really stands out for us as an example of how these individuals are used as breeding mill animals, and not for the sake of the animals in the wild as much, if any. Perhaps the only benefit is to the captive facilities and the tickets they sell.
Well, next Thursday, September 1st, marks the opening day of the season of the annual dolphin massacre in Taiji, Japan, as you had mentioned before. Many people have seen the film The Cove that depicts the mass slaughter of these animals. It's really a horrific sight. But many of these dolphins are also captured to be sold to aquariums for human entertainment. So can you talk to us a bit more about this, and where in North America or the rest of the world can we find the Taiji dolphins in aquariums?
Well, fortunately, we haven't had any imports to the U.S. in very recent years, even though this did go on, until maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But yes, some of the individuals in facilities now have come from Taiji or similarly unethical and brutal slaughters. Right now, in the last 10 years alone, dolphin exports from Taiji, Japan, have gone to really a large part of Asia, China, Korea, also Ukraine, Russia, Egypt, Iran, Turkey, the UAE, Emirates, Thailand, Philippines. So a lot of people are going on vacation, some U.S. people, some just people who don't know any different, and they'll see what look like very high-tech, attractive facilities, and they will not literally have any idea of the blood trail that has followed those dolphins, and the fact that when people go to facilities, they're often paying for the perpetuation of these hunts. I mean, there's been an allotment for this 2016-2017 slaughter year of over 1,500 cetaceans. So this is not just cruel, but it's incessant, and it is being fueled by the captivity industry. And if I may point out, Allison, just because we have not had cetaceans from Taiji imported into the U.S., we did have Georgia Aquarium listed as one of our worst aquariums because they and two or three other facilities in the U.S. did apply for a permit to obtain beluga whales who were wild caught from Russia. And so there were 18 of them who they wanted to import. And this is into the U.S. These were wild caught animals. These were not rescued animals. These were captured from the wild. So really, we have no way of knowing if those orcas were captured even by reasonably pushed professional standards, let alone approximating what could be considered humane standards. So the U.S. aquaria industry is still actively involved to that degree. But I point out that the Natural Marine Fisheries Service and NOAA denied Georgia Aquarium and the others the permit to import those belugas. So it's not just an animal rights concern that the media often likes to limit it to, not that animal rights concerns aren't important, but there are also ecological and conservation reasons why zoos and aquaria often steal from the wild, even in the U.S. and Canada, just to restock their own populations.
Well, all the information you've given thus far has been so compelling, you would think, to not want to support this industry. But there are still those people, the public, consumers, who say that they support it for educational purposes. So what simple words would you say to them to have them reconsider patronizing these establishments of captivity?
Well, I would hearken back to what I said about the National Aquarium in Baltimore, where even the CEO there said that, if anything, the watching shows and looking at dolphins and whales in relatively sterile environments is not an appropriate education anymore. That's why they're even creating their own dolphin sanctuary to let their dolphins retire. If anything, I would also maintain that the Save the Whales movement was the largest animal protection movement perhaps ever in the world, and no large whales were ever held in captivity. So any arguments for education made by conservation, I would challenge those to be backed up by scientific substantiation, papers or peer-reviewed papers or whatnot, because everything that I and other scientists have seen say that the statements that they're making don't hold water for either research or conservation or education when it comes to really actively protecting dolphins and whales in the wild, which is where they have evolved for millennia to exist.
Right. So speaking of the National Aquarium, as you mentioned, they are recognizing that this isn't the way to keep dolphins. There's a lot of public feedback. Public is starting to recognize through films like Blackfish and Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered of what the realities are for dolphins. So they are transitioning their dolphins to a seaside sanctuary environment by the year 2020. Now, is this the type of model in the future that you can foresee for other dolphins in captivity? Do you think that we are moving in that direction as a society?
Absolutely, Alyssa. I'm really glad you asked that question, because in addition to the National Aquarium initiating this on their own, I'm on an advisory board for several other projects, very active projects, to create what may be also the first, whether it's the first beluga seaside sanctuary, orca seaside sanctuary, possibly bottlenose dolphins. There is no race to be the first per se, except to have those who are suffering in captivity to get out of those horrific circumstances so that they can be in a more humane environment and be rehabilitated. So, for example, the Whale Sanctuary Project is something where in defense of animals, I represent them as a scientific advisor for the Whale Sanctuary Project. And I really encourage people to see the and SeaWorld, and this is a very scientifically based effort that's has decades of help from not just people who have been studying dolphins and whales, but also those who were in the industry and no longer want to use dolphins and whales as commodities, but to serve them with a sanctuary where they can live in peace. So there are projects actively going on right now that people can learn about. And this is the way of the future if we are ever going to have a reasonable cohabitation with dolphins and whales who we came to love so much.
And speaking of this whale sanctuary project, we actually had Dr. Lori Marino from that project on the show a couple months ago. So if people want to listen to that, you can check it out at animalvoices.org. It's an excellent interview. And this interview is excellent as well. Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us on the show today to tell us about the top 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in North America that you researched for In Defense of Animals. To find out more about IDA, you can visit idausa.org, and you can see the top 10 worst tanks list for yourself on our website, animalvoices.org. Thank you so much for your work, and have a good day.
My pleasure, Allison. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next September the 2nd. Continuing on the theme of aquariums, we'll have biologist and conservationist Jeff Matthews on the show to further discuss cetaceans in captivity at the Vancouver Aquarium. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And we're closing the show now with a song for the dolphins by local musical artist Carol Cox. This is Angel of the Sea. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
And unity this divorce your silence for eternity. Assessment deeper into myself, I understand. As the tide must come to land, so I must free my angel of the sea.